Okay, thank you very much, John. It is a pleasure to be here, and thank all of you for coming this early in the morning. We're starting 5 minutes earlier, I think, than a lot of other sessions, so you had to get up earlier to be here. I would like to talk about a long-term crop rotation that we have been doing in Florida. And a lot of people do not think about Florida as being a big row crop state. We are either the second or third largest peanut producing state and behind Georgia and Alabama. Sometimes we beat out Alabama about once every 10 years, but not often. Cotton, we have about 100,000 acres, but we have a lot of cattle, a lot of forage in the state. So the two systems that I will be talking about and comparing are what we call the sod-based rotation. It's 2 years of bahia grass followed by peanuts and then cotton. In the winter, we normally overseed with oats and rye between crops after the first year of bahia grass, and we do normally grow the perennial grass for 2 years. We will put ryegrass in the conventional rotation. We have 2 years of cotton followed by peanuts. When we first started this, we did have corn and soybean in the rotation as well. However, in North Florida, where we're located, there are a lot more cotton and peanuts in that area than corn and soybeans. And one of the things that has really become apparent, and from some of the data you will see this, is that we feel like this system with the perennial grass in it can alleviate a lot of the nitrate issues that we have. Florida has 33 class 1 springs, which is more than any other state or any other nation in the world, and that's 100 cubic feet per second of flow minimum. I think the largest one may be 850 million or million gallons, which is just north of here per day. So very large springs, but in many cases, there's a lot of row cropping or vegetable cropping that's done around these springs. And therefore, because of our sandy nature of the soils, we have high nitrates in most of the springs. So we started this study in 1999. 3 years later, we were able to get federal funding, and UGA and Auburn University joined us. But in the small replicated trials, what we looked at was the conventional rotation where we strip till. We do use the best conservation tillage methods that they use all over the country, in this case using an oat cover crop in the conventional, and the bahia grass, strip tilling through it, either irrigated or non-irrigated. The non-irrigated never gets irrigated, so that we can follow not only the soil, physical and chemical properties, but look at the plants as well. This kind of summarizes the whole talk. Relative values here, but where you single crop, and if you look at the environmental benefits, the ecosystem services and yields, and then the nutrients and water that we have to apply, this is kind of how it has played out over the years. Single crop, using strip till and a cover crop, you do get some advantages, and this is what conservation groups across the country do. When you graze that winter grazing, pretty major benefit. Cattle, we say that cattle are a BMP in Florida, and I know that there may be a lot of debate with that. Once you add the perennial grass, it's really a next step. When you put cover crops on top of that without grazing, again, a major benefit. But when you graze on top of that, many, many other benefits, and I'll try to explain some of these as I go through here. Again, this is what a lot of the conservation groups across the country do. This is a farmer, North Florida, growing corn, high residue, either no-till in this case or strip-till. Normally we do not no-till because of the natural compaction layer that we have in our soils. But what we like to say is that conservation tillage conserves what we have, while the sod-based rotation restores what we've lost, and that's organic matter. That's a big factor. Again, when I first came to Florida, there was no conservation tillage. That was 40 years ago. Many of the highways that you would drive down in March and April with our winds, you couldn't see 100 feet in front of you because of the blowing the dust. So we also have the farm scale system of the sod-based rotation, which is a 160-acre field, 139 irrigated acres. And the way it's set up, Bahia 1 and 2, the system rotates a quarter of a turn each year. Peanuts always follow Bahia grass. Bahia grass is killed out in the fall. We have exclusion cages in these quadrants that any time that we have forages, whether it's the Bahia grass or the winter grazing, we have the cages up so that we can determine cattle impacts on soil, physical and chemical properties, as well as on the crops. A lot of the data that we've collected has been a lot over the years, and I'll just point out a few of these things as we go through. So this is what it looks like in the winter in one of the quadrants, the exclusion cages, and again, this is the one in the dry corner, another one over here. But in general, what we have found is that calves also in this system, in a row crop system, have outgained calves on pastures and other areas. And I think one of the main reasons for this is that row crop land is typically fertilized every year. Pasture land is fertilized whenever farmers maybe say, well, you know, we made a little bit of money this year, let's fertilize it. So in general, also the dry corners in every one of these are more fertile, are higher in nutrients than the irrigated. And a lot of this is because when you put out irrigation, it's typical that you'll say we need to irrigate, whether you've got sensors, then the next day you get a 3-inch rain. Also, the yields are higher underneath the pivots somewhat. As far as planting Bahia grass, we always plant Bahia grass after the cotton. So it's 2 years of Bahia, followed by peanuts, followed by cotton, grazed. And initially, when we started out, we were waiting for the winter grazing to be grazed completely down, as you see here in this picture. And that would usually be in the middle of May. You plant, and crabgrass, goosegrass, Texas panicum, everything else comes up with it, and you never know that you have a stand. So we started planting in the February, early March time frame, and drilling into the winter grazing. You see an exclusion cage here that we've taken down the fence so that we could plant through it. Cattle do help establish this Bahia grass. They reduce competition. We always have to kill out the oats and rye inside the cages. Otherwise, it will smother the Bahia grass out. And essentially, you cannot use rye grass where you are planting Bahia grass. The stands are very poor. In this case, you see the oats and rye that have been grazed out here by the middle of May. You see the Bahia grass already coming up. We have had years that we have not had to take the cattle out of here. Normally, May is a dry period for us, so we'll have to take the cows off by the middle of May. By the 1st of July, 6 weeks later, very typical of what bahia grass looks like. Looks like it's been established for several years. So has a very short period of time that cattle are not involved there. And again, you see the exclusion cages. Any time that the cattle are out there, we do have exclusion cages, putting up cages in the background where winter grazing is available. When we normally we will plant the peanuts and cotton. We like to plant towards the first 2 weeks of May. We take down the fences. We strip till through that. You see an exclusion cage back in the background where the cattle are there. But again, we have cattle in there, and we are able to get good data that way. So when we first started out, we said, well, we've got about 80 acres that are in pasture at any one time, and we thought that we could run about 45 cow-calf pairs. The first year or two that we ran this, we had a lot of excess forage. Hay was cut off and moved to this. It's on the beef unit. It is a working cattle operation, and some of the folks working with cattle are in the audience here. We probably averaged close to 90 cow-calf pairs right now. There was just, I guess, 130 on there recently that had 500, almost 600-pound calves that were sold off in the fall. In many cases, we have excess forage in the winter, and we may have another 100 head of winter stockers in there for different periods of time. Growers may not be able to do this because we do have, it is a working cattle farm, and the rest of the farm is for beef production. But this part of the farm, in many cases, we may have half to two-thirds of the herd on this 160 acres, and there's another 1,000 acres in the beef farm. So most of us who have worked with conservation tillage over the years like to plant into high residue cover crops, and you know that's been shown to be some value in that. But from what we have seen by having the exclusion cages, and we can have cover crops that will get 4 or 5 feet tall, the yield data does not show that. And generally what happens to us at this period, this time of the year in May when it's dry, the rest of the farm does not have a lot of forage. And so the manager of the beef farm will usually say, well, can you delay planting a week or 10 days? We really need the forage. And so you see, this is about what we plant into every year. Not high residue. There's cotton in this quadrant, peanuts in that quadrant, bahia grass that was just planted about 2 months earlier there, and bahia grass going into the second year in that quadrant. We have looked at a lot of different aspects here, including electrical conductivity. I know that some of you from dry areas do not like high ECs. We don't really have high ECs, but the higher ECs we like because that means that we're holding maybe a little more nutrients than water. And in every case, it's when it first comes out of bahia grass, and then the next year, and as you get back into the rotation, the last year in cotton, you have the lowest EC, and the next year we have seen the same trend happening. We do have a variable rate irrigation system that we have not utilized as much as we would like. We've also looked at organic matter over the years. In this system, when we first started in 2001, we were like a lot of typical Florida soils, 1% or less in organic matter over the years, and now actually up to this point we're a little over 2% organic matter, and that amount of organic matter makes a very significant difference in how crops grow, the moisture holding capacity of those soils. And just typical of what we see when we take cores out of different areas here, the most fertile sample here came out of where vegetables are grown yearly. Here's one that had been no-tilled or strip-tilled for 35 years. It was in bahia grass for 3 years. See the organic matter difference. Here's one that was an eroded site and now has been in bahia for about 12 years. So when you look at when we first started, we were taking a lot of the data out of the small plots and applying it to our larger plots. And this is kind of typical of what we would see. May, early June are typically very dry, and you see cotton here in the background, not really coming up and irrigated, you know, looking good, strip-tilled, and always, we always have the problem you're technician will come by and say, we really need to irrigate to get a stand here. And it's like, if a farmer does not have irrigation, he doesn't have irrigation. So, you know, we have continued to not irrigate. Okay, that was early June. Early July, the same thing. Here's the 2 years, the conventional rotation. Again, heavy residue, no cattle in this small plots, but irrigated in the foreground, non-irrigated in the background. Here's the sod base rotation. Irrigated in the foreground, non-irrigated in the background. Essentially, what we have found during this 19 years this study has been going on is that the non-irrigated cotton and peanuts in this bahia system will equal or out-yield the irrigated in the conventional rotation. And that has happened every year, and some years quite a bit higher yields. And you say, well, why zero nitrogen? Well, initially when we were using our state recommendations, we were unable to control the growth even with growth regulators. So other things that we've looked at, water infiltration, and the conventional rotation for an inch of water, very slow, takes 8 minutes or so. Peanuts after bahia grass, and you find a lot of these either root where roots have decayed of the perennial grass or earthworms. We do find a lot of earthworms. We do have data on that. One of the researchers in Virginia at the Tidewater had asked, well, will this work with our cool season grasses? And we have looked at it with switchgrass, Bermuda grass, and bahia, and it appears the perennial grasses in general look good. So he put fescue and orchard grass in his, had a grad student working on it, did not do water infiltration, but went out on a day when it was pouring rain. Here's 2 years of fescue, and here's cotton strip-tilled into that versus normal cover crop in the background, standing water there, so the infiltration rate. Same here, cotton peanut rotation. Here's cotton on the third year, water standing here in the background. You see one of the perennial grasses. Here's orchard grass, another cool season grass, no standing water. So very good indication. And then their yields behind either fescue or orchard grass were very significantly higher, very similar to what we are seeing. So nitrate in the soil profile, what are cattle doing? Here's typical of what we see in the non-grazed inside the cages, in the top foot, in the root zone especially. Cattle recycle nutrients either in the irrigated is blue, non-irrigated is in the black. A lot more of the nitrates stay in that root zone, and they are available for that following crop, which has led us to reduce the nitrogen that we apply on the cotton in this plot. Potassium, very similar trend. Again, the dashed lines are grazed, almost double the amount of potassium. The question is often asked, well, won't chicken manure or something do the same thing? Well, cattle are out here every day. A lot of the potassium's in the urine. They're out there, leaving the potassium there, whereas putting chicken manure would be more like doing your normal fertilizer application, even though a little more slow release. So we wanted to look at what was happening deep down in the soil profile, and there a team of folks working on this, soil cores down to 20-something feet deep, but after about 15 years here is the sod-based rotation, and you're probably probably about half deep in the soil profile. There was a perch nitrate level down about 15, 18 feet deep here. And so I am sure that a lot of this is what's getting down into the waters. So we've also looked at rooting inside and outside the cages here with the mini rhizotron tubes, looking at the peanut roots down to 100 centimeter depth. I always ask this, the blue is grazed. I see it didn't show up, the caption didn't. Grazed and non-grazed. Cattle are making a tremendous impact, and that's one of the reasons that I say that they are a BMP for the following row crop. That was peanut, this is cotton. A very similar trend. The green was grazed, non-grazed inside the cages. The roots on the graze are getting down earlier and deeper than the non-grazed. And with last year, we were in a major drought in the southeast. Right now, this week, we're not. They're projecting dry, warm temperatures. And why does that make a difference? This year in Florida on peanuts, we have had a major problem with county agents were saying we don't know what the problem is, but turned out to be, it looks like nematodes, peanut root knot on peanut roots, and those are actually nodules. Southern root knot on cotton, that is a nematode-resistant cotton variety in the middle of a nematicide trial. Working with the nematologist, a new nematologist, in the conventional rotation versus the sod-based rotation, the reniform numbers, big differences. Microbial populations, the same way, peanuts, first-year cotton, second-year cotton, in the summer, fall, and winter. In the sod-based rotation, much higher indicator enzymes for carbon, nitrogen, phosphorus, and sulfur cycling were much higher. So to kind of summarize here, sod rotation, even plus grazing, although we didn't talk about variable rate irrigation, conservation tillage, we have seen reduction in water usage of 50 to 80%, tremendous differences. Better crop yields after Bahia, better crop yields after winter grazing, more winter grazing by a third after Bahia rotations. We've reduced the N on the cotton in this study by more than 50%, higher calf gains. We do have a website if any of you wants to get in on there. So you can see from the early table why having the cover crops and the perennial grass in a row crop system makes a very big difference. And with that, I will, if you've got time for, nope.
We have time for one question.
Okay, thank you very much.